Today I decided to visit the Aquarium of the Pacific, located in Long Beach, California, where one can't help but feel like they're traveling to an alien world, right here on our own planet. Jules Verne was a prolific French author whose writings laid much of the foundation of modern science fiction, with several of his novels adapted into successful films. Born in 1828, he became famous for combining scientific fact with adventure fiction. Verne's influence extends beyond literature and film into the world of science and technology, where he inspired generations of scientists, inventors, and explorers. In 1954, the United States Navy launched the world's first nuclear-powered submarine, named after Verne's Nautilus, the name of the underwater vessel in his novel 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, one of the most published novels of all time, which tells the story of two men that join the hunt for a mysterious sea monster that has allegedly been causing havoc, sinking ships. The men are thrown overboard when the monster attacks, and they find themselves prisoner of Captain Nemo on board his technologically advanced submarine that everyone had mistaken for a sea monster. The captain explains that he'll keep them prisoner on board rather than killing them. However, he also promises to show them the secrets of the ocean, and so the men get to experience the vast and endlessly fascinating world under the sea. They finally manage to escape at the end, but only after going on several adventures, exploring underwater caves with sights of the light illuminating the colors and shapes of the flora and fauna under the sea, making a deep impression on the prisoners, including climbing an underwater mountain that turns out to be the lost submerged city of Atlantis, with its temples and buildings. And while many people today are conditioned to believe that Atlantis was just a fable, the reality is that sea levels are now 400 feet higher than they were during the end of the Pleistocene, or Ice Age, which ended with cataclysmic events, leaving 50% of the world's fauna, or animals, extinct. Not to mention, many parts of the seafloor rising or falling, making the ancient memory of an almost forgotten global seafaring civilization not only possible, but probable, which Verne brought to life in his novel, as well as traveling below ice packs in Antarctica, exploring below the South Pole. Published in 1870, Verne was very ahead of his time with his detailed technological descriptions, since submarines were very primitive at the time. It makes one wonder how much of an influence his work had on inspiring the Germans, who actually carried out such expeditions to the polar regions, including the establishment of a submarine base in Antarctica, which the Allied powers allegedly attacked after the official end of World War II. I say allegedly because the United States officially claims that it was a scientific expedition, even though it included aircraft carriers, destroyers, planes, submarines, and over 4,500 armed soldiers led by Admiral Byrd, who gave an interview after the failed mission claiming that the U.S. needed to prepare for war with an enemy in the polar regions that had advanced aircraft and capabilities. While it is generally accepted that the German U-boats were the most sophisticated in the world at the time, a lesser known fact is that because of Germany's lack of access to oil and fossil fuel, there was a lot of pressure on them during the war to develop alternative sources of energy, which according to direct German sources, US military intelligence sources, as well as leaked documents from ex-Soviet KGB sources, indicates that Germany made considerable advances in anti-gravitic technology that did not require an internal combustion engine or aerodynamics to fly. Of course, they were not able to mass produce, implement, or weaponize this prototype technology fast enough to win the war. However, a relatively small faction of Axis military allegedly was able to retreat to Antarctica and other places in the world, such as South America, where they continued to develop what Hollywood and the media calls UFOs, which sounds fantastic, but starts to make sense in the context of many post-World War II sightings, like when a dozen flying saucers were photographed and reported flying over the White House in 1952. It seems that much of what is relegated to the genre of science fiction is actually based, at least in part, on scientific truth, which seems to be covertly withheld from the general population by global corporate structures, which have a lot to lose if disruptive technologies were to be made public, particularly big oil and the global banking sector. Mainstream academia would have us believe that Antarctica is only inhabited by penguins, that there are no breakaway civilizations that live below the ice, in outer space, or anywhere else for that matter. But as cute as penguins are, it seems that the corporate, banking, and political interests that were victorious in World War II are more like sharks than penguins, and have taken a predatory stance against alternative thought in mainstream academia, uncensored speech in mainstream media, and free thought in general when it comes to anthropology, which by any academic standard is still relegated to theory and politically biased hypothesis and not scientific fact. If mainstream academic views are in alignment with corporate finance media, globalist central bankers, woke politicians, and billionaire hedge fund managers, then they do not represent the resistance. Independent free thinkers like I do. I had a great time visiting the Aquarium of the Pacific and thought I would take a stroll by the beach before heading back home. Published in 1864, A Journey to the Center of the Earth was another blockbuster novel by Jules Verne, which helped to lay the groundwork for the modern genre of science fiction. The book is about a teenage boy that lives in Hamburg, Germany, with his uncle, that happens to be a professor of geology, who starts the story by rushing home to show his nephew a runic manuscript by the renowned Icelandic historian Snorri Sturluson, who I've covered in prior videos about the Vikings. They find hidden within its pages a separate note which, when translated into Latin and read backward, appears to be an Icelandic alchemist record of a passage leading to the center of the earth in a crater of a dormant volcano in Iceland. The crater containing the passage, however, is only revealed by shadows at noon during the last days of June, which is just a month away. So they rush off to investigate, eventually finding the correct crater and descending into the passage entrance, getting lost, but stumbling upon a subterranean river that leads to a vast lake or underground sea. And along the shore, they encounter a forest of giant mushrooms and exotic plant life, some of which glows. They build a raft, and after several days of sailing, discover ancient fauna thought to be extinct and a giant man shepherding the beasts. They flee back to the shore, and 2 months after entering the underground world, the men are carried by a volcanic eruption to the surface of Stromboli Island off the coast of Italy. Probably the most popular book by Jules Verne was called Around the World in 80 Days. Published in 1873, the novel tells the story of a wealthy Englishman who wagers that he can travel around the world in 80 days. To win the $20,000 bet, which was a lot at the time, he set out with his French valet, beginning their journey on a train ride. Shortly before his departure, someone resembling him had robbed a bank, and the sudden exit leads Scotland Yard to believe that he was the bank robber. He's then pursued by a detective, and after a series of problematic yet very entertaining adventures, he arrives back in England 5 minutes too late to win his wager. Losing what at the time was a fortune, the Englishman apologizes to his girlfriend for being unable to provide for comfort as a result of losing the bet. She in turn proposes marriage to him, and he joyfully agrees. As it turns out, their journey through the time zones had gained them a day, and he was not too late after all. The richness and poetry of the novel, together with the lively narrative, won Verne worldwide renown, and was a fantastic success for the times, setting new sales records, also running for decades as a stage adaptation. The novel inspired numerous attempts to travel around the world in 80 days or less, and in 1956 won an Academy Award for Best Picture. Verne used his writings to encrypt important occult secrets and sacred symbolism, as he was reported to have connections to the prominent secret societies of his time, the Freemasons, Golden Dawn, and Rosicrucians. He was also associated with the Angelic Society, an order behind many esoteric phenomena and movements, including the Priory of Sion and the Thule Society. The society's tradition was supposedly disseminated in cryptic form, and its membership has been postulated to include Leonardo da Vinci and Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, who I covered in a recent video and will leave a link to in the description. The Angelic Society is not a secret society as such, but harbors mostly artists who claim to have communicated with angels and have embraced these entities as their guides to complete their life's mission. This is usually perceived in a Gnostic context, where an angel is not necessarily a separate entity from oneself, but what Carl Jung might call one's own subconscious or inner or higher self, usually accessible in an altered or trance-like state. The group predated many of the modern societies and adopted an angel's head as their crest. That said, Jules Verne possessed a hidden side that was encrypted into all his work, including esoteric secrets said to have been passed down by the Cathars, the Merovingian dynasty, and Rosicrucian disclosures related to acquiring spiritual immortality, which Verne covertly discloses in a veneer or layers of symbolism. Jules Verne died in 1905. And his writings laid much of the foundation of the modern science fiction genre. And while sci-fi may not be 100% factual, it could still be more honest and foretelling than what passes for nonfiction in the mainstream media and modern academia. For many authors and filmmakers, fiction can be a better way to tell a true story, because it could bypass many of the fact-checkers and gatekeepers that try to enforce a certain politically motivated agenda. In fiction, and science fiction in particular, one can put forth intuitive truths without having to prove them or cite sources, many of which, to a large degree, push or parrot a narrative dictated by special interests. In our current era, publicly considering concepts like inner Earth, Atlantis, or even spirituality as an academically valid pursuit can lead to targeted harassment, slander, and censorship, where through fiction, an author can express taboo ideas almost free from ridicule, scorn, and suppression. After spending so much time by the sea, I thought I'd end off the day with some Thai seafood soup, which always hits the spot, and that is definitely the truth. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.